from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, how Bay Area federal workers are dealing with the partial government shutdown. It's now been 27 days since some 800,000 federal employees were furloughed or forced to work without pay. What does that mean for workers living in one of the most expensive regions in the country? We'll check in with them and gauge the impact of the longest ever government shutdown on the local and state economy. Join us after this news. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny today. President Trump has signed a bill guaranteeing back pay for furloughed federal workers, but that won't pay the bills now. And with little progress being made between Trump and Congress in the stalemate over money for a border wall, some Bay Area workers are putting off purchases or accepting donated food in order to make ends meet in this high-cost region. Just how much this now 27-day partial government shutdown is affecting people's lives and what kind of damage it might be doing to the local economy are questions we want to tackle in this hour of Forum. And we also want to hear from you. If you're a federal worker or someone who relies on one, tell us how you've been affected by the shutdown. You can call 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on Facebook, tweet us at KQED Forum, post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. John Sepulvedo, host of KQED's The California Report, is with us. Hi, John.
Hi, Mina.
And could you just start by giving us an update on any progress that's been made toward...
Pardon me, progress? I didn't understand that word.
Toward this, trying to reach some kind of a plan to end this shutdown.
In fact, we're seeing things are much more entrenched. Many people might have heard yesterday that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sent a letter suggesting to President Trump that he actually delay the State of the Union. The only other two times that I'm aware that the State of the Union has either been delayed or scrapped, one was in a time of war with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the other was in a time, and he was too sick to go, and the other was with Ronald Reagan after the 1986 Challenger explosion. So it's very unusual. And on top of that, we've been talking to Democrats who are influential within the Congress. I spoke with Adam Schiff about this yesterday. He, of course, is the congressman from Los Angeles. And his position is that Democrats don't have to do this because President Trump is asking the Congress to pay for something he didn't campaign on, President Trump, which is for American taxpayers to pay for this wall. And, of course, President Trump famously and often said that he would find a way to have Mexico paid for this wall, and that's what he campaigned on. So they don't see this as a mandate from the U.S. government and or the U.S. voters. And meanwhile, of course, Republicans are blaming Democrats. We've heard President Trump say that Democrats don't care about national security. We keep hearing that language. And then finally, you know, this is really coming down to Mitch McConnell, the Senate majority leader from Kentucky. And he right now, based on the votes and the reports that have come out, the U.S. Senate would pass a reopening of the government. There are enough Republicans. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska has indicated that she would go for it, and she's a key swing Republican. The problem is that Mitch McConnell won't let this go to a vote, and because he's majority leader, he has that priority. Now, the Senate could override that in a few weeks, but there's a lot of procedure, a lot of arcane procedure that has to go into that institution. So right now we're at this paralysis. Long answer, but short story, we're paralyzed as a government.
So no progress even with the small group of bipartisan lawmakers that
right.
met last night. And even though, as you say, Republicans are blaming Democrats, it sounds like they're, at least the latest polling data show that a lot more people find the president to be at fault, or at least his poll numbers are slipping even among his ardent
right.
supporters.
And they're generally always around like between 39% and 41%. So it's not slipping that much, but it's like the white folks with out college degrees, which is one of his biggest bases of support. We're even starting to see that they're not approving of his performance during the shutdown, according to the most recent polls.
And whether or not that will nudge anyone in any direction here, though, it sounds like what you're describing is basically people further digging in their heels.
Well, just very briefly, I mean, if I may, I mean, there are people who would just very quickly, like Mitch McConnell, what's he supposed to do? Because he'll get primaried in 2020 if he opens up the government. It's this really weird thing where because these Republicans who are in power in such conservative areas and the conservative folks so strongly approve of the shutdown and for the border wall, for example, West Virginia introduced a bill that would pay for the part of the border wall. The long story short is that there is this paralysis that's really being guided by a few people on the extreme that's shutting down the United States government.
Well, let's hear how Bay Area federal workers are weathering this paralysis. On the line now is Rebecca Jamison. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Nina.
Thanks for joining us. I understand that you are an EPA employee on furlough. Can you tell us what you do for the EPA?
I oversee cleanups in Indian Country at petroleum contamination in soil and groundwater.
And are those projects stalled right now as a result of you being out?
A couple of them very seriously stalled. One has the potential to affect drinking water for thousands of people. We have contamination in an irrigation canal that's adjacent to the Colorado River in Arizona.
Well, I understand. Yes.
And ironically, we recently concluded that this contamination stems back to the Japanese post and internment camp. So it's very old contamination. Hmm. And the Department of Interior is the responsible party. And they can't talk to us and we can't talk to them.
Because they're closed.
Yes.
Because they're closed.
So I understand that you care for your elderly mother and your brother. Tell us about your situation.
Well, I'm a single woman, 29 years at EPA, almost 30. So I have savings, but I do have an elderly mother who's in assisted living. My father died a couple of years ago, and so I've been taking care of her and having to move her out of the family home into an apartment that didn't work and now into assisted living. And I've had to help provide income for her. And so that's taken a chunk out of my savings the last couple of years. I also have a brother who's 45, but he's developmentally disabled, and I'm his legal guardian, and he is in an assisted care facility as well, and I help support him. And so my savings, which were fledged a couple years ago, are not now, and I'm having to reduce the amount of support I give my mother, which has required me to look at moving her into a smaller unit at her assisted living facility.
Well, Rebecca, are you still there? I think we lost Rebecca. Rebecca, please give us a call back if you could, because I know that there is more that you wanted to share about your situation. One of the things that we're realizing, John, with this government shutdown is that things like what she was talking about, the contaminated water that's mm-hmm. not being addressed in, you know, states like Arizona and what she called Indian Country and other parts of the West mm-hmm. as being a major issue. And then, but just also the science research sector, USGS and NASA Ames, are closed mm-hmm. around here. And, you know, that combined with the high cost of living is really forcing many people who work in departments like the EPA, who work at USGS and other at the Department of the Interior, as to whether or not it's really worth it to do the work they do for the government as opposed to something for the private sector.
Right. And think about when JPL was founded, it was, you know, 50 years ago or so, it was considered one of the most premier prestigious places you could go if you were an engineer. You knew that it was going to be a good job. You felt like you had that sense of service. And now we can't even pay those folks. It's not just them. You know, I was just on the phone with the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard is taking loans that are backed by the Red Cross, no interest loans. These are people who protect our shores, make sure that we our ports are safe, make sure that that the sea and maritime traffic is continually going. Not just that. Let's talk about air traffic controllers for a second.
Yes, you just flew here from Los Angeles to San Francisco. Did you notice any difference at those airports?
I did with the TSA, but the ANA, and I'll get to that in just one second. The anecdote I want to share actually comes from our sister station, KWMU, in St. Louis. St. Louis air traffic controllers, some of them are giving blood to make ends meet. These are the people who keep our skies clear, make sure that the traffic lands. We know the vital role that they play in national security. And I want air traffic, as somebody who flies on airplanes, I want air traffic controllers with full blood in their veins. But they're doing this and they're selling plasma because they're trying to make ends meet. And what we're starting to see, A, is that government doesn't pay what it used to, that people can't go for longer periods of time because they don't have the savings, like we were just hearing. And B, in the case of the air traffic controllers, you know, the reason we know about this is because the air traffic controllers are saying, look, we're showing up to the job, but the anxiety and the things we are doing to make money because our savings has been depleted so quickly because of these high costs of living. And this is St. Louis. This isn't San Francisco. Is putting on stress. And as we all know, in that particular job, you have to be on the ball the whole time. Not something where you can have other things clouding your judgment, taking away your concentration. So we are starting to see this kind of erosion, both within people's personal lives, like we were just hearing, but also with all of us. I mean, we all drink water. She was talking about projects that were happening in the Colorado River Indian Territory, Indian tribes. That's what they're called, CRIT, in that area. You know, we know that there are big problems with fertilizers and other things that are on that part of the Colorado that need to be monitored.
Yes, the ripple effect of all of this. And then you mentioned TSA agents. I know in San Francisco that they're actually privately funded through a third party, but
most of them are, yes.
But there are some issues in the Bay Area at Bay Area airports, specifically in San Jose. A lot of TSA agents are going without paychecks.
And one of the things we're seeing, you know, it's why a company, for those who've flown out of SFO, a company like Clear can come in, is because there's different ways to contract with each individual airport. And that's created real inequities. I was at LAX and I flew to San Francisco. People listen to California Report. Sorry, you got to hear the story again. But I accidentally, because I'm such an airhead and I was like rushing to get in because I was worried about long lines. It was actually the opposite. They were just waving people through a metal detectors. There were three TSA agents in all of Terminal 7. And we, all of us were just getting rushed through, no body scans. I left my belt on, my shoes on. Normally that's the kind of stuff. I'm one of those people, you know, when the TSA agents, you're putting your stuff onto the cart and they're saying, make sure you take your belt off. Make sure you take your shoes off. I'm always the person who's all, oh yeah, duh. Even though I've flown so many times, they weren't even doing that. They were literally talking about, that they hadn't been paid in 26 days. I asked them, what they were doing for money. They told me many of them were calling out sick to go to Lyft and Uber. This is at LAX. And, they jokingly asked if I had any money in my baggage that I could either give them or lend them. And of course but these are the people who are charged with making sure that we don't have a September 11th. And so it raises two questions, and these are the two questions I heard on Twitter, you know, after I posted the story. Either the security is not that important, or we are really putting ourselves at danger.
Yes, it feels like it runs counter to everything President Trump's stated goal related to border security. I'm being told that we had an issue with our phone lines that's been resolved now. Thank you for being patient with us on that. You may now call 866-733-6786 with your stories about whether you're a federal government contractor or a federal worker, someone who relies on federal employees as well, that has been affected by the government shutdown. You can also email your stories to forum at kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. And I believe Rebecca Jameson is back online with us. Rebecca, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for your patience while we sorted that out. One of the things that struck me about you describing your career at EPA is that you said you're a 29-year veteran. So that must mean that you experienced the other government shutdown in the 90s.
Yes. Yes. I was in the Gingrich years. Yes.
Does this one feel the same, different? How are you experiencing this one?
Well, it's interesting because there I was at the beginning of my career. I was quite young and didn't have a lot of savings, so I was nervous at that time as well, although people around me, more senior people, kept saying, oh, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, you'll get your money back. But I was quite frugal at that time and didn't spend. And but this time, I feel a sort of malevolent air underpinning the whole thing. And
malevolent
air. About,
what do you mean by that?
Well, it has long been the goal of people on the conservative side of the spectrum to reduce government spending. And Mick Mulvaney, I understand, was one of the builders of the Tea Party movement. He's now Well, he has like three jobs in the administration, but he was in charge of the budget, OMB. So it seems just like this is just a means to an end.
We've known this is
for
trying
about
to carry
7 years. Yeah.
Some kind of shrinking government ideology.
OPM, which is the Office of Personnel Management, advised all government agencies about 7 years ago that we were going to be facing a talent drain in the next 5 to 7 years because most federal workers were of retirement age. So we knew this was coming, that we were going to have like a brain drain. And now with what's going on, a lot of people are retiring early, people who enjoyed their careers and plan to stay. They can't live with the stressors, and so they're retiring early, and we're not being allowed to hire new talent, new people. And those new people that we have hired, living in the Bay Area is very expensive. They're living in a house with 3 to 5 people. They have no idea when they will ever be able to live alone or pay off their student debt. And so I fear that we're going to lose talented people. They're not going to apply for jobs.
So you're seeing this as having, this shutdown as having bigger implications for recruiting and retaining workers at the Environmental Protection Agency. You had mentioned that some of the steps that you've taken to manage the lack of a paycheck. Is there anything else that you've done differently? Any plans you've changed as a result of the shutdown?
Well, I am applying for unemployment. I had never done that before. I have a mortgage. I live in Oakland. I've talked to my bank about, you know, forbearance, what's involved in that and how that'll affect my credit. You know, and then just, you know, I usually pay off my credit cards, but now I'm just paying a minimum because I need the money for other immediate items. And, you know, I've had people that I have worked with at home, and I've not been able to pay them. And I've actually asked them to stop working for me for a bit. And one of them happens to be the woman who cleans house for me, and she has breast cancer, she just told me. Not a good time for her not to be having my income, my modest income that I've helped provide her with.
Once again, underscoring the ripple effect. Rebecca Jameson, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, Anna.
Rebecca Jameson, she's the Senior Program Officer in the Land Division at the Environmental Protection Agency. John Spolvedo.
I just want to talk very briefly about unemployment. Rebecca's really lucky that she's been furloughed. Furloughed people can get unemployment. People who are being called into work, like the 9 out of 10 Customs and Border Protection officers, like the U.S. Coast Guard members, folks who have either a national security or they can't. And so they are literally working without getting paid.
And we have Megan Wood on the line now. Her husband is a member of the U.S. Coast Guard, and he is one of those people, Megan Wood, that is getting called back in to work without pay?
Yes. Hi, thank you for having me on today. Yes, my husband, along with 42,000 other active duty Coast Guard members, have been reporting to work every single day since the government shut down 26 days ago.
And this is the first time that he has worked and experienced not getting a paycheck for it.
Yes. So, you know, waking up on Tuesday morning and checking your bank account and the reality of there was no money in our account to pay for our bills for the next, you know, 2 weeks was real for us and every single family member that and Coast Guard member of, you know, this service.
And you are a family of five. You have three kids. Is that right?
Yes. I have a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 4-month-old. And, you know, our 6-year-old does extracurricular activities and our 3-year-old attends preschool. And it's one of those things that we rely on that paycheck every month to pay for those things for them. And we don't want this to affect them. We want them to live as normal as they can. So, you know, finding ways to work around those bills and, you know, making it happen for our kids is our main priority.
Yes. What are some of the hardest things to try and pay for, but also the ways that you've worked around not having a paycheck?
So I'm a part of an amazing group called the North Bay Coast Guard Spouses Association, and we have come together for our community of spouses here in Novato, and we have set up a food drive, a food bank, food distribution for our families here and the surrounding Coast Guard families that live near us. The Novato community has come out overwhelmingly with donations of food, non-perishable foods, supplies, household supplies, hygiene items, and has literally set up a food bank for us to pass out to our families this Saturday.
And these are supplies that are these the things that people are asking for? It sounds like you're talking about everyday things, non-perishable foods, detergent. Yes.
It's diapers, it's wipes for, you know, baby supplies.
Yes.
It's razors, shampoo, detergent, you know, things you wouldn't think about, garbage bags, toilet paper, things that add up.
And John Sepulvedo mentioned that because your husband is reporting to work every day, he is not eligible for unemployment. And I was also reading that, of course, frequently members of the U.S. Coast Guard have to move every few years. So spouses tend to not be able to work while their partner is working for the Coast Guard. Is that your situation as well, that you just don't have, you really do rely 100% on your partner's income?
Absolutely. Most of the families around here are single income families and rely on that one paycheck. A lot of us are stay home spouses and, you know, we try to make ends meet and try to stretch that paycheck every 2 weeks. So the hit that we got on Tuesday without receiving it, you know, a lot of us are anxious, we're worried, we're scared, but our community is banded together. And I encourage other spouses to reach out to your community, reach out to each other, you know. The support that we've received and that you will receive is amazing.
And will, is the support that you're getting for the community, will it be enough for you to continue for potentially more weeks without pay, maybe even until the end of this month or more?
We are very fortunate in our Novato community that they have provided for us tenfold. I mean, they have told us, if you need to do this again, we will do another drive for you. Our biggest concern is to take the everyday stress of grocery shopping off of our families. And hopefully they can, you know, stretch their money and reach out to the other people that are resources that are, thank you, that are loaning money and stuff to them, that they can stretch that money and use it for other bills. But we would like to be able to take that stress of everyday stuff, grocery shopping, toilet paper, you know, the necessities off of them.
How are you trying to keep morale high, to keep yourself from getting too down during this stressful time?
I am reaching out to every spouse around us, you know, just going for a coffee in the morning, just meeting up together, just to hang out with our kids, telling each other, you've got this, what do you need? Little things like that. And just the distribution drive we put together, we brought the spouses together, you know, more than we could have asked for, just to be a support for each other.
Megan Wood, she's a board member of the North Bay Coast Guard Spouses Club, and her husband is a Coast Guard officer working now without pay. Thanks for sharing your story with us as well.
Thank you so much for having me, and, you know, thank you to everyone for your support for this community and for the branch.
And again, we're talking with furloughed federal employees and their partners about how they're coping with the nation's now longest ever government shutdown. We're also going to get a sense of how the region and the state have been affected economically after the break. We're joined now by John Sepulvedo, host of the California Report. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. The federal government has been partially shut down for nearly a month now, as President Trump continues to call for funding for a border wall. For some 800,000 federal employees, that's meant weeks of working without pay or being furloughed. And as bills mount for rent and everyday things in our costly region, we're hearing from Bay Area government workers about how the shutdown is affecting their lives, as well as people who rely on government workers either as patrons or because they provide them with their main source of income. And we will also be looking at, in this half hour, the impact on the local and state economy. If you'd like to join the conversation with your story, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website. Email us, forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on forum or tweet us at KQED Forum. We've got John Sepulvedo with us, host of the California Report. And now we also have Virag in, or David in Winters? Or is this Virag in San Jose?
Hi, this is Virag.
Hi, Virag. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
We've had some issues with our phones today, so appreciate your patience.
So I'm appalled at what the government workers have to go through. And we are at the other end where I wanted to highlight how the shutdown is affecting our ability to bring products to the market or for small companies to survive. I have a small craft distillery which has been making whiskey in San Jose, and we were planning to enter the market early this year. We started a few years ago. We invested life savings into starting it, hiring employees, running it. And typically, when you might have heard this about beer labels, any alcohol label needs to be approved by the federal government,
yes,
by CTB in the federal government. And this process used to take 1 to 2 weeks. We can't get the label approved. We can't enter the market. And we don't know even when the government opens up, is this going to take 2 months at that time or 3 months at that time? And so we are just at a wit's end. We are sitting there. We can't create product. We can't sell the product. And it's just an untenable situation, which I don't know how to handle.
Yes, John, you have looked at what's been happening with the Food and Drug Administration and food inspections even. There have been headlines like, what can we eat? What can we not eat? I mean, Virag's example is just such a perfect case of how the closure of important departments has such a long and intense reach.
A long tail. And I mean, think about it. I've heard in the press so many stories like his with regards to the alcoholic beverage industry. And then when you flip it, and like you were saying, one of the things I was seeing was a lot of people were like, oh, well, vegetables and those things aren't inspected anymore. Those stories are erroneous, mainly because in those particular sectors, the industry regulates itself. So the Doles and Chiquitas of the world, they're looking at their own product and kind of self-monitoring. Where this really comes into play with food inspections has to do with the USDA. These are things, important things like baby formula, cattle, beef, fish, seafood, those types of either meat products or things that are going to end up in children's mouths. And we know that for a while, those inspections were suspended or incredibly slowed. They were ordered to come back to work about a day and a half ago, which means essentially that just like the U.S. Coast Guard, just like Customs and Border Patrol, this is seen as an essential function. People have to show up for work, and they're not going to get paid, and they're not going to be able to get unemployment. And so they're going to be working for free until they get this payment back.
Let's go next to Bo in Sacramento. Hi, Bo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't want to come off as callous in any way, but I think there's some responsibility on any worker who could be affected by any government shutdown to make sure that they have some sort of, monetary reserves, that in such a case. And, while I do want to show sympathy towards the workers, but at the same time, I mean, when you accept a position that could shut down with the government, this is just, it comes with the territory. This is not something that has not happened before. But I do think that the elected officials definitely need to come together and try and make something, work something out.
Well, Bo, thanks for sharing your opinion. One of the things that this has revealed, John Sepulveda, is just how low our savings rate is in this country.
Right.
Of course, in the Bay Area, with its high cost of living, what has many people have put much more of their income towards housing and other expenses.
Right. And on the personal level, that has been one of the arguments, is that people should prepare for it. The savings rate now in the country, not in the Bay Area, but in the country, is about 2.4%. So I'm about 3% or 4% below that. The savings rate in 1960 was 10.1%. So obviously Americans aren't able to save as much money. I do want to point out, though, that Bo was talking about the we should prepare for this. He was making that call clearly on a cell phone, which is regulated by the FCC, technology that was developed by the U.S. government and the military. A lot of the cell phone technology was. And he was doing so on a roadway, which comes with federal federal funds and management by the Department of Transportation, much of it on the state level with Caltrans, but coming from the federal Department of Transportation. My point being is that when the government shuts down, it has ripple effects. And if the government was not functioning when those developments were made, the roadway was laid, and the FCC developed a cell technology, Bo would not be able to enjoy that phone call that he just made from his car.
Well, there are also people who are being affected who are not federal workers. So how could they prepare? Robert writes, for example, please highlight the plight of people beyond federal workers who are affected. This includes contract businesses with low-wage workers who will never receive back pay, businesses like microbrewers who can't conduct their business with the government shut down. They can't sell products without label approval from a government agency, which is what we just heard from the San Jose caller. Mm-hmm. Small businesses like local cafes now suffering because the workers who normally patronize their establishments are absent. We have on the line now Chris Thornburg. He is a founding partner at Beacon Economics, which is an independent economic research and consulting firm headquartered in Los Angeles. Hi, Chris Thornburg.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Can you give us a sense of the economic impact of this shutdown so far on the state of California?
Well, it's hard to say. Look, we don't have, of course, a lot of current data to tell us exactly what's happening right now. So we have to sort of rely, if you will, on our best estimate, thinking through some of these numbers. Candidly, I don't think that there's that much of effect yet. You know, one of the big things here that everybody has to keep in mind is there's a big difference between business delayed and business canceled. For example, I just heard the previous speaker discuss that, you know, certain type of companies out there may not be getting a permit, may not be getting a label. That is true. But, you know, when it's delayed for a week or two, look, I can tell you as a person who works with government agencies at various levels on a regular basis, not getting paid or not getting something done on time is kind of how it works when you're working with government. And everybody in this space should be prepared for delays, whether it comes from just bureaucratic incompetence or a government shutdown, as the case may be. So from my perspective, I'm not seeing that there's going to be any kind of impact yet. But, of course, that analysis critically depends on the length of time that this thing goes on.
Right.
We're only a few weeks in, and I think there's a massive difference between, say, 3 weeks and 3 months.
The massive difference being, so let's say that this goes into February, for example. It goes through the month of January. Would you be worried then, Chris Thornburg?
No, I wouldn't. I think that we would catch up relatively quickly. The other small silver lining is this is all occurring in January. We don't see it, you know, because every time the government comes out with, let's say, a GDP estimate, we seasonally adjust it. But if you don't seasonally adjust the data, what you'll see is every time, every single year between the fourth quarter and the first quarter, there's an enormous decline in economic activity, and January is particularly dead. We got past Christmas. We got past New Year's Eve. Everybody has got a massive hangover, and we all kind of just take a collective deep breath in January. Not a lot happens. So on that basis, the kind of disruptions and the impact they're going to have on the broader economy are less this month than, say, for example, had it happened in November or December when there's a heck of a lot of economic activity going on. But again, this is all a function of time. If you stretch this thing out into March, then all bets are off. That's when things really start to bite. That's when the problems become real. I'm just hoping that we don't get to that point.
Well, let me just ask you quickly for your reaction to the statement from the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, who said yesterday that the economy has lost half a percentage point of growth in a month.
Yeah, that's nonsensical. I mean, that's one of these quotes that sounds great, but when you try to scratch away at it, there's no there.
Even though again, they're increasing their projections based on losses from private contractors or people who, you know, rely on government functions or government workers.
Oh, again, but business canceled is different than business delayed.
I see.
Right? When you think about, say, when a U.S. economy heads into a downturn, it's because there are forces in our economy that's creating business to be canceled. And that has substantial real effects. You know, in a sense, think of this as, if you will, a giant national snowstorm. which has shut down the ability for the federal government to do its job. You know, I was raised in Rochester, New York, and we had horrible snowstorms on a regular basis, yet the Rochester economy kept ticking forward just fine, because, again, it's business delayed. But when this goes to the point of months, that's when it starts being business canceled, because you can't really catch up at that point in time, and that's when real harm starts to occur.
If you had to pinpoint where damage could be irreparable, though, I think of, say, the national parks, for example, where trees are getting cut down, where there's overflow of trees. I mean, there are places like that, right, where damage has already occurred, Chris Thornburg.
Well, and your point's well taken. Let's take a step back for a second, right, and think about what we're fighting over. The annual budget for the federal government is $3.8 trillion. The discretionary spending is $1.1 trillion. The cost of a full wall on the border would be $60 to $70 billion. The cost of an aircraft carrier is $15 billion. Yet we are shutting down the government and allowing precious national resources to be, as you point out, trashed on the basis of what is functionally chump change for the federal government, $5.7 billion. And yet that is a dramatic and sad consequence of this shutdown. But that's not an economic flow consequence. You're never going to see the trashing of our national parks in a GDP statistic. But I tell you what, from a point of having national treasures severely damaged and really not being there in the same form for future generations, that's a tragedy that may not be in GDP, but it's very real.
Well, Amy writes, what can citizens do to get the attention of our elected leaders to let them know the government shutdown is unacceptable? It's absolutely unfair to hold federal workers hostage while our elected leaders can't resolve the border issues. Nelson writes, in the first place, the shutdown only affects non-essential employees. What private sector businesses hires non-essential employees? Second, these people will get paid their salaries and benefits in due course. The Dems created this crisis. Deal with it. Lisa writes, why aren't we addressing the fact the Republicans had 2 years control and did not pass a wall bill? Why are we allowing the Republicans and McConnell to blame Democrats? The Republicans should be furious at McConnell, and Republicans are responsible for the shutdown. Just a taste of how this, you know, almost a parallel with what's happening in Washington. But let me go to some more listener calls and comments. I'm going to go to Joseph in L.A. Hi, Joseph. Hi, Joseph. Are you there?
This is Stacy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stacy in San Anselmo?
Yeah.
Hi, Stacy. Thanks.
Hi. So I just wanted to make a comment. So my husband is a federal employee with NASA, and so we've lost one of our two salaries. We have two kids in college. We're wondering how we're going to be paying for those bills that are coming due. And to the caller from Sacramento who stated that, you know, why don't these federal workers plan ahead for these events? We have planned somewhat for rainy day, and it's not like we're going to lose our home or anything, but it is completely changing our lives in terms of what we choose to spend money on. We won't be recouping that, so the state of the economy from these federal workers who are not going to be spending, we're not going to re-spend the money we didn't spend in January, assuming we get it back. Instead, we've just changed our lifestyle. And I'd like to add that my husband is now out looking for a job, which he hasn't done in 35 years. So it's in a different profession. So it is affecting, there is a ripple effect, I would say, on these 800,000 federal employees that I can't believe we're not going to see, not just in the economy, but the quality of one of our national treasures, which is NASA. Because then you start seeing these missions change. You start seeing the quality go down on the people you can hire with these events that are now starting to become more regular. But this one is a standout.
Well, Stacy, thanks for sharing your story. We go now to Mali Kigasari. She is an Equal Employment Opportunity Commission investigator. Thanks for joining us, Mali Kigasari.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for covering such an important issue.
Well, first, tell us quickly what you do and, you know, whether or not things aren't getting done as a result of your absence.
Well, first of all, I want to indicate that I'm speaking on my own behalf as a federal employee and not on behalf of the commission. And secondly, if I could do a public service announcement that, well, I'm an investigator. I investigate the allegations of workplace discrimination. So right now, this is the 27th day that I have not been able to go back to work because I'm, quote unquote, not essential. But I want to let your listeners know that if they suffered a tangible employment action, if they got fired or didn't get hired or were sexually harassed or otherwise harassed, they can actually file a charge of discrimination with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission within 300 days of that tangible employment action taking place. But since we are closed, I am aware that there are some essential employees that will receive your facts. I want to make sure that your listeners know that sending an inquiry is not really filing the charge of discrimination. You must sign a charge and date it in order to be an actual charge of discrimination. So I also recommend that since we have a 300-day statutory bar date, perhaps your listeners, if they want to file a charge, they consider going perhaps to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which has a one-year bar date from the date of your tangible employment action. Just so I want to make sure that I put it out there so our charging parties are taken care of before we talk about me.
I see. Well, what has the EEOC told you about what you're supposed to do during this time? Have they said that you can, you know, continue to do some work remotely?
No, in fact, I got direct instructions we're not allowed to work whatsoever. And it is really disheartening that I know, you know, a lot of your guests talk about how they have to change their lifestyle in order to pay the bills. You know, but I'm really disheartened by what we have come to be. I'm an immigrant. I came to Berkeley as a student, and I realized what a wonderful place America was. And, you know, this America that I came to decades ago is not this America. I was just listening to one of your callers saying that, well, you signed in when you became a federal employee. Why didn't you save? Well, you know, when you decide to become a public servant, by definition, you're not getting the highest paid job. We're not famous for paying our federal employees the top dollar. So we have saved. We have done what we can do. So this really the national crisis that Trump is talking about. It's really the crisis that people have lost empathy for one another. It has become this, you know, religion of republicanism that, you know, either my way or highway. And either I get my wall, which, you know, Trump is not going to get his wall because hundreds of miles are of private domain. There's no way he can take those trains and just install a wall on it. It's not going to happen. His wall is imaginary, but my bills are real.
Yes. And well, Maliki Ghassari, the president has signed a bill saying that the workers will be paid after the shutdown. Does that give you any sense of stability, any hope now as a result?
It actually does not. You know, think about it. Which business would pay people without working? And there's this uncertainty. There, you know, I mean, we're lucky. My wife works for a nonprofit in the Bay Area. She brings a paycheck in. I teach on the side. So that's not the point. You know, since 1990, when we started this game of shutdown, every year that we do it, it gets worse. Now, we have upped it by 27 days today. You know, this is not American to shut people out from doing their work. It's not American. Mitch McConnell has not even brought this vote to the floor. He has disappeared.
Well, Maliki Ghassari, I appreciate you sharing your experience with us. Maliki Ghassari is a senior investigator with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for covering this important issue.
Chris Thornburg, I just want to highlight something that Mali said, which is, you know, since we've started these shutdowns in the 90s, it makes me think about the effect on the economy if this is a constant threat. How destabilizing is that?
Well, again, for the most part, these shutdowns have ended relatively quickly. It's hard to say in any past shutdown that there's been any consequences for the economy because they have been so short, as the case may be. This time, it's getting longer. And as noted, you know, you said a couple of important things there, and I think it's worth people understanding that, yes, federal workers, even those who aren't working, will actually get back pay. And that, of course, is a source of stability for them, even if they don't like it in the short run. It's also worth noting that your average federal worker makes substantially more than your average worker in the U.S. economy, not because it's such a generous job, but because, for the most part, they're highly skilled people. With the exception of, say, for example, TSA agents, most of these families should not be living anywhere close to hand-to-mouth, and yet again, that means that this shouldn't have all that dramatic of an impact on them. But, and there's always a but there, the bigger question for me is less about this individual shutdown, which, if it continues, will become worrisome, but really the reflection on the just complete dysfunction of our government. Dysfunction, by the way, that's been in place for any number of years. It's just really being revealed, I think, in a way that's really shocking to people right now. But this is hardly new. I mean, this kind of burn all bridges and take no prisoners is completely the opposite of what government's supposed to be. Being a politician is supposed to be the art of compromise. It's about bringing people together to come up with one common cause. Our government is so dysfunctional, and that's being driven on both sides of the aisle, that it can't even do basic things like pass a budget, much less take on the true long-run issues our nation needs to be dealing with, which is underinvestment in infrastructure, rising wealth inequality, dealing with entitlement reform before these programs become completely untenable. None of this is even being conversed, and that's what scares me the most. It's the broader dysfunction of government that will eventually catch up and really hurt us if we don't all wake up and realize that we have to stop putting these radicals and both sides of the aisle into power.
Well, let's hear next from Patrick in Mountain View. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. I'm a senior security advisor, information security advisor at NASA Ames Research, and I saw this coming. I'd like to respond to some of the people who say that we should have planned for this. I haven't taken a day of vacation since Donald Trump was elected. I've been saving my vacation this entire time, so I have about 6 weeks of vacation time. I work for a contract company. It has a contract with NASA. I will not get back pay. I think it's very important to point that out. The people who are working for companies that have a contract with the government that are not civil service are not going to get any back pay. It's a
yes.
Total loss to us. And the bulk of the people who do information security are contractors. So we're going to lose a lot of talent because, you know, people just, you know, they can't live this long without any source of income. For some reason, we're considered to be non-essential. That's another point. A lot of people who are really important have been sent home. We're fighting a constant war with other countries in information security. If you look at the Director of National Intelligence report from last year, the Director of National Intelligence listed cyber threats ahead of weapons of mass destruction. And we're blocking and tackling against Russia and China all the time. When I was told to step away from my keyboard on December the 21st, I'm sure bad things have happened.
Patrick, you said that you did prepare for this. You haven't taken a day of vacation. But do you resent that? Do you feel like you shouldn't
have? Well, I'm not going to get any vacation now. It's all been used up. They're paying me out of my vacation until that runs out. Once that happens, then it's leave without pay. I'll get nothing.
Well, Patrick, thanks for sharing your situation, and I'm sorry for the stress it's clearly caused you for some time now. And we go next to Joseph in L.A. Thanks for your patience. Joseph, what's on your mind?
Hi, hello. Obviously, this doesn't apply to the contractors and still for you for sure, but the people that are going to get this time off and that will get their back pay and like that, like one of the panelists said, not all of them are you know, on the, you know, hurting for a paycheck. You know, we are effectively giving them a paid vacation on our tax dollars. And, you know, I don't know about you, but my company is not going to let me take 3 or 4 weeks off and then pay me later for that. So I'm just saying it's another incident of our Confederacy of Dunces, the U.S. government, just constantly, constantly making a big fool of themselves. Thank you.
Well, Chris Thornburg, these comments about it being like a vacation, comments that from Senator Lindsey Graham that they understand that the shutdown is inconvenient, do you think that's fair?
Well, again, I'm going to go back to the idea that this is all going to critically depend on how long this thing goes on for. Look, for example, the last caller, you're right, he's a subcontractor. He's not going to get paid for these weeks. On the other hand, there's nothing's changed in terms of the contract with the federal government in terms of the money going to the company. The company has to turn around and eventually make up for the work that they are owed the federal government, and they'll do so probably by having to work all their folks extra time to catch up with what they have contracted for. So, again, if this is a few weeks, I disagree with that assessment. I think people will get the hours. They will get partly made up, if not wholly made up. But to me, if this thing continues to drag on, that's when the effects become far more real. And broadly speaking, if this does go on, it's just a symptom of the broader dysfunction in our government that we should all have been paying attention to for the last 5 years, not just the last month.
Well, Merrily writes, we have to remember that the middle class and below have not been given a raise since the early 1980s, thereby making it almost impossible to save, while the top 1% have raked in 60 to 80% of the gains in the economy. It's shameful. Kath tweets, housing vouchers aren't being paid for this quarter, affecting seniors, disabled vets, and disabled adults. Christopher Thornburg with Beacon Economics, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure to be here.
And thanks, John Sepulvedo, host of KQED's California Report, for your thoughts as well.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for sharing your stories, your insights, and your opinions. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.